Welcome to Golf Legends Podcast. Please be aware that there is mild profanity in today's episode. We hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the Golf Legends Podcast, where we cover the champions and major winners of golf. Your hosts and main contributors are Dustin and Chad. Thanks for joining us today.
How we doing, everybody? We're here with another Golf Legends Podcast. Today, we're going to be covering Gene Sarazen. How you doing today, Dustin?
I'm good. I'm it's rainy weather here, itching to get on the course a little bit.
Yeah, it's still going to be a bit.
Excited to leave the flagstick in.
It was all frozen tundra this morning, so it's still going to be a bit, but we're trying to stay sharp, so we'll be ready for the spring.
This guy's
a character. This is going to be a fun one.
Character's the best way.
Gene Sarazen, born February 27th, 1902. So this is another older guy, but he played into the modern days of golf. You know, he played with Nicklaus. His real name was Eugenio Saraceni, and he changed his name to Gene Sarazen because, quote unquote, he sounded like a golfer's name.
I love it. His
original name either sounded like a violin player or an opera singer.
Well, I mean, yeah, you can't sound like that if you're trying to golf.
Yeah. So he was from New York. Total PGA Tour wins was 39. This guy was a pro for a long time, and he won a lot of tournaments. He had 7 majors, and he was the first guy to win the modern Grand Slam. Wow. So this guy, he kind of sounds like, from everything that we read, like he was an animal, point of being an asshole. Like, he was a shark out there. He was, you know, you want to call him, you know, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
He wanted to beat you, and he wanted to make you know about it. You know, he wanted to beat you and beat you and beat you and never stop. And Nicklaus he has a famous quote about Sarazen. He was probably the most combative of all great champions. So has some respect, but he's also he was an animal out on the course.
Yeah, he's willing to go.
He wasn't there to be friends.
No, he's willing to go. So what Chad said was, those 7 major wins. So he's got the Masters in 1935, the U.S. Open in 1922, 1932, the Open in 1932. PGA Championship in 1922, 1923, and 1933. So he's got a couple back-to-backs there. And like what Chad said, he was the first player to win the modern Grand Champion Championship, which is one hell of a feat. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
He's the first one to do it. And Nicklaus was around then. And Bobby Jones was around then. I mean, you know,
a lot of guys
they're tailing
that we talk
off,
about,
but,
yeah, you know.
But he's doing it in that era. I mean, he's doing it in both the eras. Yeah. So you might have heard earlier on, we're gonna kind of go into his other life, but he started caddying at 10 years old, which is, I mean, just crazy. I mean, just crazy. But anyway, he taught himself the game of golf. He dropped out of the 6th grade. So you got to realize that Sarazen isn't... He's one of these other guys. Yes, he's a pro, but he's like Francis we met. He isn't a guy who is coming for money. He isn't somebody who's getting the lessons of golf. No, he's earning it. He's doing the caddy. He's seeing how it's going. He's learning the courses, and then he's teaching himself the game.
Which is how a lot of these guys got into a lot of the true champions. Like, they had to work for it, and that's why, you know, that drive is part of what made them so good. But you know, you had Byron Nelson. We talked about Francis.
Oh, yeah. Ben Hogan. Yeah.
There's, you know, Ben Hogan, same thing. He started out caddying because you had to start caddying. That was the only way a lot of these poorer kids had access
to
a golf course.
And money, any form of money. It was quick money. It wasn't quick.
You were carrying around free golf, and you learned. You watched guys play.
You were outside.
You maybe get free equipment. Like, guys would give you old clubs.
Exactly.
You get balls. You know, you shag lost balls and stuff like that. You get to play for free, obviously, at twilight hours.
So Sarazen started caddying at the nearby Apawamis Club, which is in New York. where he reportedly saw Harold Hilton, the winner of 4 British Amateurs and 2 British Opens, and the winner of the 1911 U.S. Amateur. So this is a guy who won. I mean, he was in the United States and he was winning things. Kind of funny enough, he decided to go pro after he saw Francis Ouimet's victory at the U.S. Open.
That was in 1913.
So that was exactly that was in 1913. So as a 20-year-old, which is like Ouimet in that sense, he won the U.S. Open at Skokie in 1922, shooting a 68 in the final round. He was the first player to shoot under 70 to win. So, I think I over-exaggerate some things, but we're talking about a guy that before this research, I literally had no idea who he was. Lo and behold, not only is he one of the greatest competitors, and this is from Jack Nicklaus saying this, that he wanted, I mean, he's so combative, he wants to rip your heart out on the course and leave it there. And he's the first player to win the modern Grand Slam. And at 20, he's the first player to win a championship with an under 70. Nobody had done that so far.
Yeah.
And golf had been around at this point. I mean, you're in 1922. It's in the heyday of American or United States, whatever you want to call it, golf. I mean, yes, it's coming around that the everyman is playing a little bit more and more, but he's 20 years old. I mean, this is, that's crazy. He added the PGA Championship at Oakmont later that year. So he won 2 major championships at 20 years old.
Yeah.
He says, with great bravado, he challenged golf's supreme showman, Walter Hagen. So we're going to cover Hagen. Hagen's going to be episodes.
He's a heavy hitter that's going to be coming up
goodness,
soon.
Yeah. To a 70-hole event for the World Championship and won. And this is all in this year, in 1922, when he's 20. Repeating his victory in the PGA Championship the next year, he won a total of 39 PGA Tour victories. I mean, this is... And he did it so quickly that he was great. He was a comet in that thing. He was skyrocketing up the ranks.
Yeah, by the time he was 33, he had already won all 7 of the majors that he won. By 33.
Sure.
Which I mean, that's middle-aged,
but golfers, golfers traditionally play in the normal tour, I would say 46. Feel 48, yeah. Right? Yeah. Then they want to go into the night.
40 is kind of the cutoff. Like, the great ones will play the normal tour.
Into the 50s, roughly. Not long into the 50s, though. Then they're going senior tour.
A lot of them start peeling off, mid-40s. Yeah. So. A fun fact about Saracen is he was a monster of a man standing at 5'5", 145 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
Saracen was the shortest of golf's great champions. But he was solidly built and possessed a tremendous competitive heart, which we've already talked about.
Yeah,
but he was an animal.
He was literally, absolutely an animal.
Kind of had some of that little man syndrome. His accolades speak for themselves. Like, he was amazing.
So do you know who is it Tom Wilson? Who's the one that has the Wilson I don't know. The endorsement. Is it the clubs? What's the clubs I'm thinking about? Is it those? Anyway, now that I feel it's like a tangent. He was able to keep Wilson Sporting Goods endorsement for the entirety of his life. So he was endorsed. I mean, he lived until, I believe, he was 91 or something of that. 97, sorry. Yeah. And for all of his life as a pro, from 20 years old to 97, he had an endorsement deal.
He had this contract with Wilson for 75 years.
So
that's still got to be the longest running sports endorsement contract.
It absolutely has to be. So what I'm going to say next is this is the antithesis of Gene Sarazen. He says he rose to the ranks of being one of the world's best players with the likes of Walter Hagen and Bobby Jones. Now, remember the first quote we said, and that was Jack Nicklaus. So this man not only went after the best in the 20s, 30s, 40s, he was around for the 60s, 70s, and 80s and into the early 90s, yes, he was older and not playing golf then, or not playing golf into this in the sense of like being incredibly not competitive, but in you know, in golfing shape in the time and the age. But he's going after all of the greats of golf. And that's great. I mean,
yeah, this guy, if anybody really spanned, you know, golf in its infancy, yes, all the way up until modern day,
especially in
golf,
the United States,
is
the,
this guy.
Absolutely.
He, you know, he hit a hole in one in 1973 at the age of 71.
Sure.
In a competition, in a real tournament. So this, I mean, this guy, he,
Gene, man, he you had are. It
and he, I mean, he played well for a very
absolutely
long time.
So the, we're going to talk about one of his, we talked about him winning at a young age of 20, being the modern Grand Slam. But here's where Gene gets a little wilder, in the whole sense of it. He won, in 1932, he won the British Open, at Sandwich, using literally a new invention called the sand wedge, which, wait for it, people, he invented. Yep. So he invented the modern sand wedge that we're currently still using.
Yeah, the Sarazen wedge.
Oh, I love this guy. I love him.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Yeah, he called it the sand iron, and his original club is no longer on display at the Prince's, as it is worth too much money for insurers to cover. I mean, that's how valuable
that's
this thing
awesome
is.
Awesome. That's awesome.
No one, you know, it's hidden. It's not available to be seen anymore. But he began with the club flipped upside down in his bag because he didn't want anybody to see what it was.
So, he comes into the practice rounds. It's 1932. He goes to the British Open at Sandwich. He's feeling great, right? He's going into this next tournament after the U.S. Open, I believe, right? Or is it before? World's Two? No, it's before this, so in the beginning.
Yeah.
He invents the sand wedge, okay? Invents it. He keeps it in his bag upside down, so during the practice rounds, no one could see him use it.
This guy's a total shark.
he's the greatest golfer.
I can't say I'd do it differently,
he's
though.
He's so
I mean,
great.
Yeah, I can't say I'd do it any differently. So there's a before okay. we get too before we start patting him on the back too much,
okay.
there is we do have to play devil's advocate
right.
here a little bit. A similar club to the sand wedge was patented in 1928 by a guy named Edwin Kerr McLean.
Okay, yeah.
And
yep.
it's possible, now granted, there's no verification of this, but it is possible that Sarazen saw this club. So Sarazen was using his sand wedge in 1932. And a sand wedge-like club, very similar to Sarazen's, was patented 4 years prior to that.
Okay.
So we have
yes.
to, you know, it's very likely that Sarazen, I mean, obviously the guy knew golf.
Yes.
And he knew
if
a sand wedge was something that he needed, it's a high probability that he could have invented something like
sure,
that.
Sure, yeah.
But and there's also a possibility he saw something similar.
And had it made,
obviously,
yes.
He's the main guy. No one's ever heard of Edwin Kerr McLean.
No,
before.
Yeah.
So Sarazen's obviously the first major player to use the sand wedge.
Yeah, and I mean the McLean guy could just be in. Look, we could be wrong. He could be somebody huge in golf that we just didn't check out. But he could, you know, he patented it, so he obviously was a golfer or a golf inventor or at least a tinkerer, right? So to get a little bit more in the weeds, right? So he invents this club. He's been known that he struggles in the sand. He's not happy with it. Bobby Jones has a sand club that has a concave face, which contacted the ball twice during a swing. So you take the swing, it actually hits the ball twice.
So it's like a cup.
Yes,
basically.
Yeah.
It's got a cup.
This
shape.
It was later banned, right? So Sarazen's innovation was to weld solder, right? Is that how you say it?
Solder.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Onto the lower back of the club, building up the flange so that it sat lower than the leading edge when basically hit, right? The flange, not the leading edge, would contact the sand first and explode the sand as a shot was played. So if you've played golf at all, what do they tell you? They say hit behind the ball and hit the sand. The sand is what powers the ball out of the sand trap.
Yeah.
This is the guy that literally invented this. He made, and we're all doing it still. Yeah.
His newly developed technique, which is exactly what Dustin just said, was to strike a couple of inches behind the ball, not actually contacting the ball with the club, but using the sand.
Yeah, it's
every top golfer since has utilized the sand wedge in the design and that technique.
Since 1932. Okay, so since the guy brought it out at the British Open, which he won with the sand wedge.
Yeah, not only did he have the club was in the bottom of his bag, face down in his bag, he won the fucking tournament.
He brings the club out during the rounds, not the practice rounds, but during the rounds of golf. No one knows what's going on. They can't tell him no. It's just a different looking sand wedge, right? Still a sand wedge. You still get to claim it in your bag. And now every golfer and amateur in the world are playing with it. Every single one.
Yes.
I mean, he created the short game out of the sand.
Yes.
That's literally what he did when you were in a sand trap. Put your head up and kiss to Gene Sarazen. Because he's the one that can get you out of this.
Yes. This guy is an animal.
So he goes to these tournaments. He's winning. He's obviously winning. He's on a streak. I said earlier, you know, it's like 22, 32. There's a few in there, there's two in 22. There's one in 23. There's 1932. There's two of them then, and there's 1933. We're gonna skip ahead to a little bit, because we're gonna talk about it's so amazing to me that we're getting close to his story, but we haven't even gotten to really the best parts yet.
Yeah,
I mean, this is a story that he's inventing clubs, he's winning tournaments, he's a shark, he's a great player against the greatest players of golf,
yeah,
right?
Through this whole time, so, you know, the late 20s and the early 30s, he played a lot of exhibition matches with Bobby Jones and Walter Hagen.
And he's winning. I mean, he's at least in them and win. If you've seen Bagger Vance, he's the guy. He's Matt Damon's character, because they were supposed to be playing Walter Hagen and Bobby Jones, and this was the other one. Except he was a normal professional golfer and winning. Like,
yeah, and it brought these three guys brought a lot of increased popularity to golf.
Absolutely.
So even though they were already professionals and everything, they were playing these tournaments all over the place and just bringing popularity to the sport. So. Because before this time, golf was really not well known.
No,
and it was a
huge thing.
Yeah,
it was 1913.
It was the Depression.
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
Nobody
yes.
had money. Golf clubs were expensive because they were new and they were hard to find.
Unless you were making them yourself, absolutely. Yeah,
and balls were expensive, so you couldn't just be hitting balls in a lake.
No, because they were
losing
break.
Them.
Yeah, they'd break and they'd not.
Or if you lose them, you got to buy more. So yeah, it was a interesting time, but they brought a lot of popularity to the sport. So now we'll get to, you want to go into his Masters win in 1935?
So he wins all these championships, right? But he hasn't won the Masters yet. This is the last championship that he wins. And it's 1935, so we're setting the scene. 1935, it's the Masters. It's, if you don't know where, that's in Augusta National Golf Club. He is feeling pretty good. He's trying to preserve a tie, as far as
final
I know,
round,
right? Yeah, final round.
15th hole, and he hits what's called, which we've heard this term a bunch of times. They use it in wars and all sorts of other
absolutely.
Stuff. But they called this at the time the shot heard around the world. And he hit a spoon, which has the loft of a modern four-wood. And he hit this thing, Dustin, 235 yards. 235 yards.
That's not the best part.
Into the hole. in scoring a double eagle.
I love this.
A double eagle.
So in this,
so it's a par, a hole in one on a par four.
So we're going to talk about this shot a little bit more, but the funniest part of this shot was it didn't win the tournament for him.
No.
It tied it for him. He needed it. He needed it bad. And yes, he went on to play he played the following day, the pair played a 36-hole playoff. A 36-hole. They went after the full tournament. They went 36 more. And then Sarazen did win by five shots. But so this shot that is heard around the world is there's a bridge there now, and it's named after him, the Sarazen Bridge, approaching the left side of the 15th green. It was named in 1955 to commemorate the Double Eagle 20th anniversary, right? So
they actually had a contest
to try and duplicate it.
Yeah, they had a contest to try and duplicate it as kind of a commemoration for the event, because this, I would venture to say this was probably the biggest, most famous shot in golf at this point in time.
Yes. Oh, 100%. 100%.
Not only because
it's everywhere.
It was,
I mean, the news is big at this point, right? Not TV, but telegraphs, newspaper. They're going flying. I mean, I believe flying. Like, we're getting.
Yeah.
He's
a top five golfer in the world, and he gets a ace on a par four at one of the biggest tournaments in the world.
It's so good.
And he hits great. A club. You know, you had to really.
He's a four-wood.
Yeah.
He's a four-wood 235.
You've really got to hit
straight,
the nuts off that thing.
Yeah, straight. And so we've got a quote from him. From the minute I hit the ball, there was this feeling in my system that it was going to be close, Sarazen recalled. The ball went straight for the hole about 235 yards away. It didn't carry the green. It carried short and rolled about 15 feet to the cup and in. There wasn't the steep incline in the front of the green there is now. And if you've seen the Masters, look up the 15th hole. There is a massive steep incline that players try to bounce off of it to let, like, roll kind of up. When you miss it, you go down bad. Particularly into the water and the little rocks. If I hit the same shot today, it would roll back into the water. He says, the only way I could tell if it dropped or not, those 20 people around the green all jumped up and yelled like hell, and one of them was Bobby Jones. He had walked back down from the clubhouse to see Hagen and me finish. You got the greatest golfer, Bobby Jones, of your time, getting to witness you dropping in a double eagle from 235 out. From 235 out, just dropping it down, baby.
Yes.
Like, my goodness.
Taking this thing to a playoff.
So and that's the best part.
Yeah.
Was he didn't even win this thing with this shot. I mean, like, how as a golfer, like, I hit the shot, I'm done. I could be this first hole. I'm walking off the course, baby.
Off. Yeah,
man,
you can't end better than
this
that.
This is not how you do it.
So he goes and plays 16, 17, and 18.
Ties with the guy.
And pars all of them. And goes to a 36-hole playoff.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
So that would be his final championship win. That gets us up to seven. He was really known for his compact but ferocious swing. So he
was only 5'5".
Yeah,
and he hit.
It was only 145 or something like that.
Hit a 235-yard four-wood with a persimmon head.
I love this.
I mean, so
he's got this little compact.
I don't even think I could hit that 160, 180 yards.
No. So he plays this. Chad had talked about an animal seems like the right call for this guy. He just loved competition, loved beating people. And he was notorious for the competition and his fast play. In 1947, him and George Fazio, which I'm not sure who he is, played a round at Augusta, all right? 1947. He is roughly what? He was 20?
He's 45.
45, okay.
Yeah.
At 45, right? Plays a round of golf, 18 holes, an hour and 57 minutes. Like,
yeah, they didn't have golf carts back then.
You still don't have golf carts in Augusta. How fast are you playing?
Yeah.
There's got to be some pickups. You ain't putting every hole.
Well, you got to
not
be,
a chance.
You got to be good too. You can't be shanking them in the woods. You're playing fairways and you're getting cars.
Yeah.
And you're not hitting a lot of shots.
Absolutely. So part of Sarazen's fun that we've researched and we've had a good time with, and I, like I was saying, I didn't know who this guy was, and he's He's a.
They should have made a movie.
He's a monster. He's the great. Yeah, he's
this guy. I mean, of all the golf movies out there, this guy would have been great.
He's a playboy. He's everything.
Yeah, he's a mix of like a Hollywood celebrity, a comedian.
We've got in 1931. He's being taught by Howard Hughes how to fly a plane. He noticed that the tail adjusted downward during takeoff and came upon the idea of the modern sandwich. So that's coming into that.
Yeah.
He obviously did the sandwich in 1933. And this could absolutely just be a legend about Gene Sarazen. But still, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, and then a few years before that, you know, he did that in 33. That was when he, you know, he kind of got the idea for the sandwich. In 1929, he was, you know, must have been hanging out with Ty Cobb. You know, one of the greatest baseball players of all time, and decided he wanted to make a weighted golf club.
I mean,
for warming up, practicing.
How many times you can buy those now? You can buy them right now. They got a cute little ball at the end that's weighted.
Yeah.
That looks like a lacrosse ball that like has this great little whip action to it, and it absolutely does help. I mean, it's he was inventing the modern golf swings, and not even the golf swings, but the golf equipment we're starting to use.
Yeah.
I mean, sand wedges. And he was trying to, which he thought was his biggest contribution. He was trying to unsuccessfully enlarge the hole from 4 inches to 8, which that would make it a little bit interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, but
fitting a basketball
but
in
you,
there almost.
Yeah, but you think, I mean, I got to wonder if the yips were happening. Just a touch there. I mean.
This guy was funny because it sounds like, you know, when he was on the course, he was kind of, like I said, an animal. Like, just a competitor, like not somebody you wanted to get in the way of on the course.
Absolutely.
But he was also like a big ambassador for getting American pros into the game, promoting the game, doing exhibitions.
He had a funny nickname, right?
Yeah, he was called the Squire.
The Squire, okay.
After he bought a farm for his family in upstate New York in the early 60s. So he did a lot for the game, and he was involved in the game all the way up until he died. I mean,
He started
when he was 10 years old, and he was basically in the game until 1999.
Yeah, we met an episode or two ago, and this one is in the same vein. You know, he comes back in the early 60s, and he's in Shell's Wonderful World of Golf. So he's hosting, you know, I believe that's a TV show.
Yeah, it must have been.
Yeah, he's hosting a TV show. He's, you know, another one is in 1973. He has a 50th anniversary of his first appearance. 50th anniversary of his first appearance in the British Open. And then,
which he was 21.
I mean, that's...
Yeah.
That's insane. And the crazier part is in 71, at 71, he made a hole in one with a punched 5-iron.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you talking about here?
Par 3 hole.
And
yeah.
It was 50 years after his first appearance. I love this guy.
Unbelievable.
He's great. So as we start winding down with Gene,
1992, he was presented with the Bob Jones Award from the USGA.
Yeah, which I mean, obviously, you know, that's for Bobby Jones.
Yeah.
And his health had been failing in recent years from that, but he loved it so much. He returned each spring to Augusta for the Masters, where he served as an honorary tournament starter along with Byron Nelson and Sam Snead every year since 1981, hitting the opening shot of the tournament. Now, think about that for just a second. Again, he won his tournaments in 1930s. I mean, he did.
Yeah, the early 30s.
And he's still going after, he's still being competitive. I mean, he hit a hole-in-one on his 50th anniversary of his appearance at the British Open. I mean, he loves the game of golf. He's a tournament starter with Byron Nelson and Sam Snead, two other people that he competed against. I mean,
yeah,
and that's how much respect. That's how much like he was into this game of golf. I mean, it's great.
Yeah. He even this so he, He was always known as a brilliant shot maker who could, which I quote unquote, do just about anything he wanted to with the ball. And that's a quote from
Bob Jones.
Yeah. And so he even toured the world with a trick shot artist named Joe Kirkwood.
I love this.
Like later in life.
I love this guy, man. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like he had a great life. And yeah, we're not dialing down on his like personal life or anything like that. And we really won't for a lot of these golfers. So, but man,
his life was golf.
His, and it sounded like it was great. And folks, men, women, husbands and wives, boyfriend, girlfriends, I feel like we found the key to life, by the way, might be playing golf, because we're covering a couple of these golfers that are living into their 90s, and all they're really doing is golfing.
They're walking a lot.
So, I mean, we might have something. So yeah, Sarazen is a little bit different as opposed to Nelson or we met in the, and a lot of the golfers actually. So his longevity in the game is really his hallmark. He was 61 when he made his final cut at the Masters, a feat only eclipsed by Sam Snead, who made it at the age 62.
That's unbelievable.
So, yeah, it is. It really is unbelievable. I mean,
that's when most people retire nowadays, and they're making a cut at the top level tournaments.
Exactly.
Not
the
senior tour.
Top level tournaments. So, when he was 71, he played in his last tournament. 71! Played in his last tournament, astonishing the golfing world by scoring a hole-in-one in his eighth hole during the British Open's first round. Now, I'm going to imagine that he got an exemption into the British Open. I think it's like if you win it, you can get an exemption for as long as you want.
Yeah,
or something
that was
like
that shot we were talking about a few minutes ago. Where he hit a 5-iron,
just a punch shot, just hit a punch shot,
rolled it up and in
at 71, man. And that's in the British Open. This isn't at your local muni or even a country club. This is at the British Open, and he drops it in. He was the first recipient of the PGA Tour Lifetime Achievement Award. This is Gene Sarazen. I mean, I think you're right, Chad. Let's get a screenplay going now, because this guy's life is something different, man.
I'm pretty sure, like, even if we don't really know what we're doing,
we're doing great now.
Just the stories we read about in the last 30 minutes, we could make a pretty damn good movie about Gene Sarazen.
He created a weighted golf club. He created
a sand wedge that he hid for the entire tournament. Nobody even knew about it.
That he brought out during the tournament and then won the tournament.
Yeah.
And then he had the shot heard around the world by smoking a 4-wood.
Yeah.
235 yards. I mean,
won 7 tournaments while he was.
Oh man,
7 tournaments before he was 34.
Seven majors.
Sorry.
Yeah, you talk about. I mean, and we can't stress this enough. You talk about a true spokesman for the game. He did all of this. He won all these tournaments, but in two completely different eras. In the era of, I mean, honestly, persimmon woods and things of that nature and persimmon clubs into the era of steel shafts. I mean, because that's what they were using when Jack Nicklaus was around. They still use some of that now. He was known as being a combatant on the course. I mean, even all of that time, all of the 61 years he was on the courses, basically. You played against him, he wanted to crush you. Like,
yeah.
And that's what's great about it.
Yeah,
and
he wasn't a gentleman out on the course.
No.
He wanted to crush people.
And that's the most amazing thing to me is that he spanned eras of golf and was great in all of them. Like, he didn't just win all at once. And yes, he did win his majors, but he won tournaments throughout his career, starting at 20, where he won his first major. Like,
Had a grand slam by the time he was 23.
Jeez.
By the time he was 23.
I mean,
Gene Sarazen, hell of a golfer.
Hell of a golfer.
So he ended up, born 1902, and he ended up passing away at his home in Naples.
Naples, yep, yep.
And on May 13th, 1999. So he lived up until just a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, and
hell of a golfer. Really left his imprint on the game of golf. So that's another one in the books.
Yeah, we're just going to keep rolling on through. Yep. We appreciate all of you for hanging out with us and coming into the cart, so to speak. Yep. And
as always, if you have any ideas, thoughts, corrections, comments,
we'd love to hear from you. We our website. What am I talking about? Our email.
golflegendspod@gmail.com.
Perfect. And we'll get like social media up and running at some point. We'll really hit that out, but
we're gonna try and get an episode out a week.
I think we're gonna shoot for Thursdays. Yeah. I think for the most part,
most of them are gonna be 30 to 40 minutes. Yeah, and it's kind of depending on who we're covering.
We'd love to hear more from you. So like, use that email and let us know what you guys think and if we're blabbering on too much or whatever it is. We're just kind of having fun here. In general, so
yep.
Thanks so much, guys. We appreciate it.
We'll see you next time.
If you enjoyed our show, please rate us on Apple iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram @GolfLegendPod. And if you have ideas on who we should cover or just want to drop us a line, please do @GolfLegendsPod@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back on the links in a week.